Radio. I am Craig Wynn, more familiar to many, and particularly to Yara as Yada. I'm here with Dee and with Kirk. We're doing this program on the Red Heifer. It is a story that is far more interesting, vital, riveting, prophetic than I think anyone could possibly have imagined. And we began presenting this identity, purpose, if you will, of the prophecy of the Red Heifer, which is presented in the Torah, Bamidbar, chapter 19, Numbers 19. We began presenting it a couple of weeks ago. We emphasized it last week. We'll be on this subject now for a number of weeks going forward. And the reason for it is the vital role this plays and the return of Yahweh and Goat. In fact, it's not possible without the sacrifice of the Red Heifer. Yahweh specifically arranged it this way. So we are going to go through this timeline. I want to do what I did last week. I want to backtrack a little bit because I think context is king. And as I was correcting a number of our volumes to the latest understanding that we have obtained and translating and considering Yahweh's testimony, I noticed that there is a statement in Yeshayah 17:7 that is also vital to our understanding of the timing and purpose and role of the Red Heifer. The Red Heifer is actually introduced to us in the Torah, but the prophetic presentation of it so that we would know when the Red Heifer arrives and the specific purpose of the Red Heifer on that particular day is presented by the great prophet Yeshayah in the 17th chapter. I want to pick up the reading in what is now called 17:3. It says, the children of Israel, individuals who engage and endure with God, will actually continue to exist, prophetically declares Yahweh, the vast array of spiritual messengers in 17:3. Yeshayah 17:4, Isaiah 17:4 reads, and it will transpire in that day that the size of Jacob will be decreased to the point of no longer being sustainable or viable. The fattest, best protected, and most important place at the midsection of his physical existence will be leaned and wastefully sacrificed as part of the sickening agenda of world leaders. This is the two-state disillusion, the final solution that makes Israel unsustainable. Then there will exist something which can be compared to the collecting and bringing together, tensely dramatic ingathering, the removal and receiving of a harvest, a katsir, a cutting away and reaping during a short but vexing time of standing grain, deeply rooted, steadfast, upright, and established. And his Zoroa, the one who is cultivating the seeds for this harvest to be fruitful and productive, will reap the harvest with unfolding implications, cutting the valued crop away from a troubling time of first fruits, forming an overflowing torrent moving swiftly from one place to another, a river of light in linear fashion as a result of the stem of the main branch. Now we're talking here, Yeshayah is, of the Shavuah Katsir, the Shavuah harvest. It's next on the agenda. It will occur simultaneously with the imposition of the two-state solution that will send Israel of the waste, as the prophet has declared.
Mm-hmm.
In addition, Yeshayah says, there will be, at a certain time, that which is similar to a rapid gleaning of what is left, and a final ingathering, to be quickly prepared and removed, a lakat, a first fruit, flowing from one place to another in linear fashion, in the profound depths of Raphaim, where the sick have been healed, and the defective continue to languish. The feeble will falter. Souls of the dead will remain. This is Yeshayah 17:5. What he's talking about here, this last gleaning, is the Teruah harvest. It will take place as the sun sets in Jerusalem on the Shabbat of September 23rd, 2033. Now this brings us to the most amazing installment of prophecy pursuant to our time that I think any of us have ever considered. Yeshayah insights will take us to a place I don't think any of us could have imagined. And yet, his depiction has been here for all to read for 27 centuries.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of the Zoroah, it says, he says, and he will remain, enduring, being left behind as flesh and blood, for having caused people with physical bodies to be spared as a remnant. Sha'ar. And this will occur during it, which means that the Zoroah, who is speaking to you this evening, who is the one cultivating these harvests, is going to be left behind on Teruah. And that at that time, he's going to cause the physical, mortal bodies of a remnant, which would be a remnant of Israelites and Yehudim, to be spared during it. Thrust aside and left on the stems and the branches, as would be the case with an olive, when the tree is beaten from all around to shake off some of the fruit, which you shake off with a stick. The coder is a stem or stick. Olives, two or three of them, in the top, most crucial, and foremost of these branches. This would be speaking specifically of Yehudim. The vocal branch who speaks and promises and relates, this is Amir, this is Yeshayah's way of having fun, as a talkative stick. Four or five in the cleft of his crag from the branches which have been broken off. The branches which have been broken off speaks of Israelites. All as a result of the fruitful and productive heifer, the parah, of the one cultivating a flourishing and abundant harvest on behalf of future generations. Prophetically declares Yahweh, God of Yisrael, of individuals who engage and endure with God. Well, I love to give credit to Yeshayah for this, and he is my favorite prophet. This was spoken by Yahweh. So he chose these words with great precision. Now it is from this, from the recognition that the Zoroah is going to be left behind. He's going to remain as flesh and blood, which is unique because the Zoroah, as one of the two final witnesses up to this point with Eliyah, has been anything but flesh and blood. These two witnesses have extraordinary capabilities because they're coming back from Shamayim. But at this moment, he's going to be rendered flesh and blood, and he's going to make certain that there is a remnant of mortal Israelites who are left behind, two or three from the uppermost branches, Yehudim, three or four from the branches which have been cut off. And all of this is being orchestrated under the auspices of the Torah, which is a productive and fruitful heifer. Now, should anyone think that Torah, productive and fruitful heifer, was inadequate by itself to equate the events of Yom Teruah? You're listening and you're a Jew and you'd say, what in the world is Yom Teruah? It happens to be the fifth of the five Moed Mikre established by Yahweh. It was replaced by your dunderhead rabbis to Rosh Hashanah, which is a Babylonian festival at the start of the year. Yom Teruah is the first day of the seventh month, and it is the last gleaning of Israelites and Yehuda. So this portrayal of the events of Yom Teruah, which speak of the Torah, the productive and fruitful heifer, that's not the full name of the Adamah Torah, the bloody red productive and fruitful heifer in Bamidbar, Numbers 19. Well, if you're looking for more, perhaps Yossi Yasnit's pronouncement will be sufficient. He says, in that specific day, this man, Ha-Adam, will actually pay attention to, highly regard, and accept the Almighty, the one who engaged and acted to get this done, his maker. And his eyes will choose to closely look toward the set-apart one of Yisrael. Now we have the Adamah Parah, don't we? And we know that this red heifer is a man. And you say, well, wait a minute, Parah is feminine. Well, it's only feminine in the sense that the ah ending gives it that notation, but Zeruah, which is the title afforded to both Dod as the Passover lamb and Yada as the one cultivating this harvest, is also feminine. God uses many feminine titles to describe things that he cares deeply about. And it says that this man, on this specific day, which is Yom Kippurim, excuse me, it's Yom Teruah, 10 days from Yom Kippurim, that this specific day, Yom Teruah, this Ha-Adam, pay attention to, highly regard, and accept the Almighty, which is something Yisrael still has not done. And he comes to realize that the reason that all of this matters is because Yahweh will engage and act to make all of this possible. All the while, his eyes will choose to continuously look towards the set-apart one of Yisrael. Set-apart one of Yisrael is two individuals, actually. Yahweh is the set-apart one of Yisrael, but so is his son, Dod. Yahweh isn't suggesting, of course, that this gleaning of the covenant's children during Teruah will calls all mankind to genuinely respect and regard him. Because for the next 10 years, the vast preponderance of, I should say 10 days at this point, the vast preponderance of people will continue to reject Yahweh and Dod as the Messiah and Son of God, the Savior. That is why he used Ha-Adam, this one, than any of the more common terms or plural terms for people or mortals or humankind. Ha-Adam is a singular individual, a depiction which is common throughout the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, because, well, the path to Yahweh is walked individually. Reinforcing this point, every reference to Hugh, him, or his throughout this statement was also written in third person, singular. But more to the point, Yahweh is making here, there should be no missing the fact that he concludes the previous prophetic statement introducing the Zeruah, cultivating the Teruah Lakat as a Parah, productive and bloody red heifer. Thereafter, God is introducing us to the second half of this title with Ha-Adam, a bloody red man, also known as Yada, who is now acting in the role of the red heifer. It is on this day, Yom Teruah, that the Adamah Parah's regard for Yahweh, the commitment, his commitment to closely examining and carefully considering Yahweh's testimony and the acceptance of God's plan for this moment and this particular mikra, one that Jews haven't celebrated now for hundreds of years, will cause the Zeruah to act doing what his father wants. And that's a tall order, since it is to let his guard down and allow Satan, who has been kept from him, to bludgeon him to death as a sacrificial offering to cleanse and prepare the mortal remnant of Yisrael. Beyond this, Yada's focus will be on the set-apart one of Yisrael, which is descriptive of his God and of his King. So with his last ounce of devotion, God will find a way to miraculously cleanse his people and his land of religion, politics, and militancy as a result of what his cold voice has done. It will be an extraordinary day's work with exemplary results. And we are reminded of what Elia achieved 2,888 years ago, as his act then served as a harbinger of what he will soon help orchestrate. So then, the prophecy reads, he shall never accept or gaze upon the altars of these works of his hands, representing what his fingers have made. They will not focus upon either that which is associated with the Asherahs, the mothers of gods, the queens of heavens, and the Madonnas and child, or the worship of sun god images. Yesayah, Isaiah 17:8. It will be forevermore, as it was so briefly during Elia's humiliation and extermination of all things pertaining to the politicized religions that have evolved from the Asherahs and the worship of sun god images, also known as Christianity, Judaism, and Islam. So now, as we turn the page back to our future and explore what the Torah reveals about tomorrow, all of this is relevant to where we're going. This is the last prophecy that Yahweh revealed to humankind. It was revealed 2,500 years ago. Please pay especially close attention, because the day will vividly and actually arrive that a fiery light will burn, blazing and consuming all that is combustible on part of a burnt offering, to purge and remove that which is senseless and stupid. Like a flaming oven, a fire pot and furnace for an exceptionally intense blaze. Malachi, my messenger, Malachi 4:1. At least as it begins. What God is talking about, this fiery light which is in a bird, this blaze which consumes a burnt offering, which is designed to remove that which is senseless and stupid, this flaming oven and furnace, which is exceptionally intense, is the very fire that will emanate out of the sacrifice of the red heifer. This is the last sign of God to his people. This is their last opportunity to come clean. This will occur as the sun rises, with a backdrop of a solar eclipse, actually, on Teruah, 2033. So as we behold, and we will move into the text of the Torah momentarily, and consider the prophecy of the red heifer, the Ba'ar, this fiery light burning to consume and remove that which is senseless and stupid, will be the one that Elia asked Yahweh to ignite around the bludgeoned body of the Adam of Perah. It will incinerate and eliminate the foolish idiocy that has rendered so many Jews recalcitrant and stubborn over the ages. It will also serve as a beacon to awaken the surviving remnant of God's people and then call them home. Malachi 4:1 continues. Then, all who are presumptuous and arrogant, in addition to all who engage and act upon that which is wickedly wrong, so as to bear their guilt and remain condemnable. Will become worthless stubble and wasteful chaff, and it will be scorched and set ablaze, burning them up and consuming them. When we read in Isaiah 17 that there will be some spared, the actual number of mortal Israelites that will be in Israel on this day in Jerusalem will likely be in the range of 700,000. We get this number realizing that about half of the world's Jewish population, a little more, lives in Israel now. That it's only about 20% of them, however, that are going to have any chance of listening to this message. But between now and then, two out of every three of them is going to be killed during the time of Jacob's trouble. And so by the time you do the math on how many would be the least bit receptive in Israel, and it's about 700,000 on this day, but only about 20% of them are really likely to listen, because you've got the progressives who are too political on one side, the right-wingers who are too political on the other side, the Haredim who are too religious to come to their senses, and there'll be another 20% that are just way too preoccupied. But that's kind of the numbers. But those who are overtly religious and political will be incinerated along with the Muslims who have come to eradicate Israel. So God's not going to be any kinder to the religious or overtly political among his people. And it is only those who are receptive to the gift of the sacrifice of the Adam that will be spared long enough and prepared well enough to be there when the hour returns with the goat in 10 days. So this great blaze consuming the red heifer and Israel's guilt is also going to incinerate the religious and political, those who are opposed to God and his people. The city of goat and the mountain of God will be expunged of all belligerents. This is the first step in restoring Gan Eden. Malachi 4:1 continues, "This day which is coming, says Yahweh, of the heavenly hosts, for there to be joy in the relationship, the steadfast Soreth, the sucker, emerging from the original root of the family line, and the Anaf, stem, branching out of the trunk to provide cover, will not free or release them, nor will he abandon or forsake those who are left." This is an important statement because Yeshayah has introduced the Choder as the sucker emerging from the original roots of Yeshay and as the secondary stem branching off of the trunk of the tree. Now when Yahweh is speaking this to his people, he is drilling down on those concepts with Koresh and Anath. Mm-hmm. This is the Choder who is serving in this role. Now, this isn't the Day of Days, but it is the dramatic prelude to Yom Kippurim and to Yahweh's and Dod's homecoming. It's what makes the family reunion possible. Now, God is speaking of how the Choder will morph into the Adam of Hurah, the bloody man who has been fruitful and productive, indicating that the red heifer will appear at the dawn of Teruah. Following the successful attack gleaning, the previous sunset, of course, from the Hebrew perspective, it's still the same day, the Zeruah, the one cultivating the harvest, will be transformed to save Yehudim, Yisrael, and actually the planet. From at least God's testimony, that's what he tells us. So then, she will appear at dawn. This is the red heifer. With the sunrise, shining brightly, ascending with the sun for the dawning of a new day, providing enlightenment on your behalf and for all of you to approach who respect and value my name, the rightful and vindicating Son of Righteousness, along with the restoration and reconciliation, providing a remedy for mortal men, curing them of this plague. within her extremities, the exposed epidermis, the outermost of her appearance as she takes flight to the cornerstone. You should all come forth during an exodus, leaping and frolicking like young bulls who have come full circle back to where it all began, contemplating being able to stretch out in a restful dwelling place. Now, there are many marvelous insights into this pronouncement, pursuant to what the Soter and Zeruah will accomplish with Eliyah immediately before Yahweh's return. And since the subject is she, the reference is to the Zeruah's role as the red heifer, as was the case with Dod during Passover. The celebration of our relationship with Yahweh will commence after sunset, while the sacrifice occurs the following sunrise. The Hebrew day was arranged specifically to accommodate the schedule of unfolding events on Pesach and Teruah. And it is this sacrifice and what Eliyah reveals about it that will add days to the lives of the remnant of Israel, enlightening them at this time while emancipating them from their guilt. And this is necessary so they can be seen in Yahweh's presence and He is returning, as I mentioned, in just 10 days.
Mm-hmm.
Now, be aware that the heifer sacrifice can benefit all who remain, but it only serves those who respect Yahweh's name. This is an essential insight still lost on many. It is why from the beginning, starting 32 years prior to this selfless act, the primary mission of Yahweh has been and remains to Yahweh. Of 12 gifts offered to Yehudim by Yahweh, the reintroduction of Yahweh's magnificent and essential name remains first and foremost. Well, since I raised the subject, and since Eliyah will be delivering my eulogy this day, I thought I'd at least do a quick review of what the 12 gifts of the Toter on Teruah might well represent as they would be viewed from Yahweh's perspective. The first is reintroducing Yahweh's name.
Yeah.
That alone would be worth a lifetime. The second, providing an accurate assessment of God's nature as the Father of the Covenant, which means He does not want anyone bowing down to Him or worshiping Him. Number three, demonstrating that Yahweh is opposed to religion, while having composed the most compelling and comprehensive denouncements of it, and goddamn religion, Christianity, and Babel. 13 volumes in total. Four, disclosing exactly what God is offering while denoting precisely what He expects in return. Five, providing a more correct and complete translation and explanation of Yahweh's testimony in the dominant language of our day.
Mm-hmm.
Revealing the five conditions and five benefits of the covenant. Seven, explaining the purpose individually and collectively, the seven Moed Mikre. Eight, offering a detailed depiction of Yahweh's timeline, sharing when every significant event has or will occur so that the receptive are informed and prepared. Nine, reinstating Dod's name and his acclaim, including his titles, Chosen One, Firstborn, Zeruah, Son of God, and Messiah. 10, properly presenting Dod as the man who volunteered to fulfill Pesach, Masa, and Bekorah, and who will return to fulfill Yom Kippurim while serving as the king of Sukkah. 11. Cultivating the Shavuah Kathir and the Teruah Lakat while sharing the many prophecies pertaining to the Nakri as the man from Edom, the Choder, Kol, Bashar, Ed, Malak, and Zeruah. Named Yada, turned Adama Parah in the end. And 12. Sviniz of the Hefer. Sacrificing my life so that Yehudim will survive. Cleansed and prepared to celebrate the homecoming and family reunion with Yahweh and Dod. It seems like a decent resume. And it will have been a life well lived.
Yeah.
So anybody that says, you know, presumptuous for you to take what Yahshua wrote and says he's speaking of you, but you know, the fact of the matter is he begins speaking of the role that I'm going to fulfill at the very beginning in Yahshua 1,
yep,
and continues it all the way through the end of his very long and extensive prophetic portrayal, devoting entire chapters to it.
Mm-hmm.
So when we deny the obvious, we don't serve anyone.
No.
Malachi, Malachi 4:3 reads, then you will tread upon and trample down the religious who are wicked and wrong, guilty and condemnable, because branded with the stigma, they have chosen to be ashes under the soles of your feet and hooves during the day, which for the benefit of the relationship, I'm going to engage and act, says Yahweh of the assembled spiritual messengers. Yes, he's going to unleash the waters. He's going to kindle the fire. And he's going to make the sacrifice of the red heifer prevail, returning the adulterous woman so that she can be betrothed to Dod, the Messiah. And all of this will happen as the waters are mixed, the ashes of the heifer sacrifice. So that we know where to look for the insight to this story, which is presented in the heart of the Torah, Malachi 4:4 reads, remember Moshe's, my associate's, Torah, which to lead to the benefits of the relationship along the path to get the greatest joy out of life, I instructed and directed through him upon Shoreb, the cutting edge and dividing line, on behalf of all Yisrael, even the inscribed prescriptions which cut you into the relationship and the means to execute good judgment, resolving disputes. Look, God says, I will send out on your behalf Eliyah, the prophet, to come before the great and awesomely awe-inspiring day of Yahweh. Malachi 4:5. When Eliyah arrives, Yahweh's return is near. The great, awe-inspiring day of Yahweh's Yom Kippurim, the day of reconciliation, is the near 6,000 Yah, sunset, October 2nd, 2033. And so every word we share regarding this will serve this purpose. And he will promote change to turn around, restore, and return the thinking and judgments, the motivations and inclinations of parents regarding sons, and the thinking, judgment, and attitude of their sons to their progenitors, lest I come and I strike the earth as accursed, a gift which has been disfigured, mutilated, and destroyed. The last words that Yahweh would speak to his creation, Malachi, my messenger, 4:6. If Eliyah and I do not do this job as Yahweh has instructed, Yahweh would spread the earth and destroy it.
Yep.
This is not only to spare the remnant of Israel so that they are prepared and cleansed for the great reset, for this opportunity to listen to and to be in the very presence of Yahweh again as he returns with the Messiah and our king, Dod, on Kippurim. Because of his great love for his people and the fact they will be there for the homecoming and they will be prepared to meet him, Yahweh will spare the earth. But that is what we have been fighting. That has been our mission for the past 23 years and will be up to the 32nd year of our engagement. All right, now that we are better positioned to appreciate what was and will be, let's listen to Yahweh introduce the Adama Parah, the red heifer. This is Numbers in the Wilderness, Bamidbar, from the Torah, 19:1. By the way, as I share this with you, do any of you know at the, this is the entire chapter, the red heifer is the entire chapter of Numbers 19. What's the story that appears in Numbers 20? That's the first words of Numbers 20. The story of the waters of Meribah. What the red heifer does is he resolves the bitterness of Israel, his rebellion and rejection. He cleanses Israel of the waters of Meribah. That is why this story is told in advance of it. It was the lowest, most despicable act in the history of the Jewish people. Then Yahweh spoke to Moshe. Now, if you've noticed, in both Yeshayah 17 and Malachi 4, it was Yahweh speaking directly or indirectly through his prophets to us. The same is true with Moshe. Then Yahweh spoke to Moshe, the one who dwelt out, and to Aaron, the alternative, to say, this is an inscribed prescription for living, of the Torah teaching and guidance, which to enjoy the benefits of the relationship is instructed and authoritatively directed because it is appointed, it is assigned by Yahweh, to affirm and to promise the following. Speak to and tell Bene Yisrael, the children of those who engage and endure with God, to choose to accept, obtain, and grasp hold of for yourselves, Adama Parah, the bloody red man on the ground, who is fruitful as a red heifer, moral, innocent, and perfected, entirely right and truthful, who, in showing the proper way, there is none in this, any shame or guilt. As a result of the relationship, it has never taken up or carried on it a yoke as a measure of control or burden. And we shared previously all that that means. But Yahweh, as a prescription for living, is providing the red heifer, the Adama Parah, but it is the people's responsibility to grasp hold, to accept this sacrifice. And that Yahweh wants his people to know that the Adama Parah, this man from Edom, who has served as the Zeroa, Yada, from his perspective is moral, he's innocent, he is perfected, he is entirely right and truthful, especially in showing the proper way to the relationship. And in him there is no shame or guilt because it is his purpose to eradicate Israel's shame and guilt. And you should give that which is associated with her to El-Azar, the one supported by God. El-Azar is the description of Eliyah, the one acting in the role of priest and royal advisor at this time. He will be the master of ceremonies. He will bring her out, withdrawing and removing her as in an exodus of God from the public place of the militant fighters laying siege. And they will have slaughtered her, bludgeoning her without resistance, Shekhat. They will have beaten and killed him at that time, literally hammering him to death for having offered his life before his presence and in front of him. Now this brings us to where we were at the end of our previous program on the red heifer. And we read then, now El-Azar, the one supported by God, also known as Eliyah, the one acting in the role of priest, will obtain and take a portion from its blood with his finger, and he will sprinkle and spatter it in the vicinity and toward the direction of the appearance and presence of the Ohel, the home of the Moed, restoring witness. From out of its blood, seven strokes. Eliah, who is the one supported by God and acting in the role of Cohen, the priest serving the remnant of Yehuda and then Yisrael, who were left behind, is depicted obtaining a portion of the Adamah Torah's red heifer's blood at the beginning and at the conclusion of the statement, but using only a portion of it, which means that he is saving the other. The procedure he will follow will be to do as Aaron had done and Dode will do, dipping a finger into the blood and then spattering seven drops of it toward the object of Yahweh's choosing. After all, it's the blood of the par bull which makes it possible for the priest to approach the Kapporet mercy seat of the Ark of the Covenant, especially on Yom Kippurim, such that the blood of the goat can be added for the benefit of the people. And Eliah, therefore, will be adding some of his, since he is the representation of the goat, to some of my own. On this occasion, less than 10 days before Dode's arrival, to do this very thing, the one assisting God will sprinkle a portion of the blood he collected from the Adamah Parah, the fruitful man, as the red heifer, El Noka, in the vicinity of Taneh, the presence of the Ohel Moed, the home of the restoring witness. There are two ways to interpret this, and the distinction between them is really quite small. Eliah and Gada will have been working on site in Jerusalem for the past 42 months. The expectation is that they won't be staying in the King David Hotel, but instead will have lived in tents pitched on the Temple Mount, which will have been erected and protected by Malachim. The one occupied by the Adamah Parah would serve as the home of the restoring witness. And should this tent have been sufficiently large, it may have been shared with recently gleaned members of the covenant family prior to their departure. An equally viable option in the same location would be for Yada and Eliah, with the help of Yahweh's Malachim, to have erected a replica of the Ohel Moed, representing the original tabernacle and radiant tent of the witness to the restoring meetings, in the proper location. After all, since Satan will want to build his own ostentatious temple to himself on this site, and since Yada is allergic to all things Islamic, the Temple Mount is going to have been cleaned for this occasion. Plenty of room now. No distractions. Also, as a related possibility, since Yahweh will be orchestrating the display of signs in support of his witness above the Temple Mount, one of the most spectacular would be for him to project a hologram of light reestablishing the outline of his future home.
Oh, cool.
Now, seven strokes is initially symbolic of the realization that the Choder has been imbued with the seven spirits of Yahweh, and that there are seven Moedim leading mankind to God's home, with the fifth Moed now fulfilled and the sixth looming. It is a marvelous way to encourage the remnant to stay the course. I find it interesting as well that the spattering is coming by way of Sheba Panam, seven strokes, because this certainly suggests that we have moved past asking Moshe to speak to the rocky crag and now to strike it. What follows is exceptionally unique. There is nothing like this said anywhere else in the Torah Wanabi, at least up to this point. Although there is another spectacular example of burning a bull, and it was done in a similar context, showing Yahweh's supremacy over the religious and political elite 2 millennia, 888 years prior to this event. It, of course, was orchestrated by none other than the man who will be arranging the following spectacle. Yes, indeed. The magnificent orator, Elia. Then that which is associated with the Purah, fruitful cow, he is to be consumed by fire and burned in his presence and sight, with its body and skin exposed to arouse, awaken, and alert, along with the bashar, corporeal flesh of the herald, in addition to its blood, over its viscera, fecal matter, and contents of its stomach and intestines, all burned as if incinerating a venomous serpent. All of them be slathered upon the man who served as the bashar, corporeal herald of the king, on top of the parah, productive one. It is identical, really, to what was done. I shouldn't say identical. It is similar to what was done to Dode's soul after Pesach, when it was slathered with our guilt, which he then carried to have incinerated in Sheol. Now, just as the mutilated remains of Dode's body, as the Passover lamb were incinerated 2,000 years prior to this, the bludgeoned body of the red heifer will be engulfed in flames. And just as the Messiah, serving as the lamb, would be bludgeoned by the beasts of Rome, the bloodiest and most sadistic enemy of Israel at the time, his herald, will be ravaged by today's bloodiest and most sadistic beasts, Muslim fasting on behest of Satan, also known as Allah. But this is still just the beginning of what will be many similarities between the two Zoroah, between the representation of these two sacrificial animals, all presented here to carry out their respective missions. Now, personally, I've always favored cremation over being consumed by worms, so it's nice to see that my bashar incineration, my body, my bashar will be incinerated, as was the case with those bashar's corporal body, following Pesach, exactly 40 Yobel previously, in this very same locale. But you will notice, as was the case with Dode serving as the AO, the parah is not consumed as part of the feast. No. In both cases, their physical bodies are purely sacrificial. And as was the case with Dode, the nephesh soul is gone, now unburdened by the mutilated flesh. Now, there are many reasons why Yahweh asks for a witness to what he's going to be orchestrating. And let's be clear in this regard, because the sacrifice of the red heifer is prophetic, not historic. Until the time of my initial visit to Israel in early 2002, there had never been a red heifer in the Promised Land. And there is no indication in the Torah or prophets that these instructions were followed previously. So this, my friends, is my funeral. And it is being orchestrated by Yahweh to achieve his purpose on behalf of his people. By watching the fire consume the bloody and beaten flesh, the witnesses will see something horrible transformed into something entirely wonderful and brilliant. The fire transforms the decaying organic material into light and into energy, similar to the geometric enhancement and empowerment of Bukudim and Shavuot. Also, fire and light are beacons, such that this elevating offering will arouse, awaken, and alert the remnant of Yisrael to Yahweh's imminent return. Without the benefit of the red heifer sacrifice, no one amongst this remnant would be prepared to live in God's presence. As we will soon see, and as I will share with the red heifer's ashes are resolving when mixed with water based upon Yahweh's Torah teaching in Bamidbar number 5, it will become obvious that without his sacrifice on the cusp of Yahweh's return, no one would survive this homecoming. Ill-prepared, still bearing the religious and political guilt which caused them to be left behind, they will have, would have been incinerated in the brilliance of Yahweh's and those presence. So, like it or not, in the end, Yisrael is saved by his glory.
Wow. Cool.
And it's as it should be, really, because Yahweh began with Goyim.
Yeah.
Now, Jews don't often think about this, but it's true.
Yeah.
Adam, Shiloh, Cain, Hebel, Noach and his wife, his sons, and their wives, Abraham and Sarah, their nephew, Lot, his daughters, and Abraham and Sarah's son and grandsons, Yitzhak and Jacob, even Esau. They were all Goyim. So the last will be as the first, coming full circle, just as the covenant family will be returning to Gan Eden on Sukkah. This is one of the lessons learned from the Igel, the heifer, the one who set the pattern where things come full circle and return to the beginning. As we know, Bashar, human herald, is one of Yada's titles. In the fire, the Zeruah turned Adamah Parah is now the Bashar heralding the restoration of Yisrael in advance of the king's arrival on Kippurim. Of the Torah, Dam blood is equated with She life. It is shed so that Yisrael might live. It is even used to mark the door of heaven as well as the souls that are lifted up in the wave offering on firstborn children. It is equated to the new wine of inheritance. Blood carries oxygen and nutrients, which are energy and fuel, to every cell of our bodies. Our blood not only carries the means to fight disease, it carries that which is not healthy away to eventually be discharged, which is exactly what's going to be happening with Yisrael's guilt. Just as the Adamah Parah is serving as a reconciling sacrifice and is not on the menu for a feast, everything is burned together, from the viscera to the contents of the intestines. And considering that Muslim swine have blood in his body, it is covered with SHIT and even that too must go. But the picture Yahweh is painting is actually much bigger. While the red heifer has been declared perfect, he has been smeared with the religious and political rebellion and the remaining, the entire remaining remnant, really. Therefore, we should look at the excrement being incinerated from the perspective of what occurred when goats fulfilled matzah. This time, however, rather than being carried into Sheol, the religious and political guilt of Yisrael is being incinerated and obliterated by thereby facilitating their reconciliation. Dod, he is the king of redemption. Yada is the prince of reconciliation. He is hauling away and disposing this remaining trash. And Yahweh has come up with this way to filter out the stench. And in this thing, Sarah, consumed in the flames, is also the word for serpent, suggesting that he is now toast and that his venom is no longer paralyzing or deadly. This is important because it is the bull's business to stamp out serpents. Satan, as the lord of snakes, is the god of religion. This adversary is Yada's adversary. This is something that made that Yahweh has made abundantly clear in his final message to us throughout the prophets, and particularly as we consider Malachi. Okay, at this point it really gets interesting. It reads, "And the one acting in the role of priest, this is Eliyah, should take cedar beams and planks, along with hyssop, scarlet, crocus, ilicus, a crimson grub and bloody red worm, and throw them towards the midst of the Parah, the productive one. Burning, changing the composition from matter to energy while consuming the serpent. Numbers 19:6. Now these symbols are all profoundly important. Dodd was crucified as the Pisachel on wood beams. And these planks were chosen because Yishak was set upon them during the dress rehearsal for Passover. They formed the doorway to heaven, which is plainly marked with the blood for all to see. Even the door and the beams temple were constructed of cedar.
Mm-hmm.
Also telling. The next day, during Matzah, Dodd's soul was laden with our religious and political guilt, which is purged from us by cleansing us of it when he took it into Sheol. I'm reiterating this because the root meaning of Ezrop is to purge and to cleanse. Also, these beings would appear again in Elia's practice run for what will soon occur. In Malachim 1 Kings 18, we find that these beams were brought into the scene of the burning bull, which was used to rid Yisrael of its political and religious influence. Now, to show that every word is important and that God's story is consistent from beginning to end, in his 22nd Mizmor Psalm, Dodd explained that his corporal body was no longer human, but had been reduced to that of a tola'a, a bloodied worm and crimson grub. These same things would be tossed into the fire with the Adam of Parah, the bloodied but productive man now called the red heifer, so that it would be obvious that Yada was following in Dodd's footsteps and reflecting the Messiah's commitment to redeem Israel. In these ways, the Bashar and Shoder has come to be the counterpart of his Messiah and King, since it was important to Yahweh to make this comparison. Let's consider what Dodd said of himself. This is from Mizmor Psalm 22:6, as Dodd was speaking in first person about what he would endure as the Passover lamb. He said, "I am but a crimson grub, a toala." Is from the species Crocus ilicus, which is a bloodied colored worm from a scarlet pulp, which makes red dye in the ancient world. I am no longer extant or present as a person. Rebuked and taunted, insulted and dishonored by humankind, and disrespected and demeaned by the family. Painful to read. Mizmor Psalm, Psalm 22:6, as Dodd wrote this of himself. The Roman legions, the very soldiers who had beaten Dodd, were known the world over for their bloody red togas and banners, this color, which was designated to invoke fear in the hearts of those they were subjugating, was derived from the tola'a, this crimson grub. For 1,000 years thereafter, this dye from the Crocus ilicus was valued above precious metals by nobility and by clerics as a symbol of power and authority. The only difference here is that the species was specifically designated as the Shani, as the Crocus ilicus, because it feeds on Allah oak leaves.
Hmm.
Muslims would be the belligerents torturing the heifer. Also telling, this worm cannot produce offspring without dying, and it voluntarily attaches itself to a tree in order to protect its young, surrendering its freedom to keep its offspring safe. Moreover, like an actual Pesach-El Passover lamb, the successive generation is nourished by the Tola's body, before freely venturing out to explore the world. God used three different words for man in this one sentence. After accurately describing the condition and appearance of his flawed body, he said that he was no longer present as a person. Ish is the term Yahweh uses to describe his form when he visits with the likes of Abraham and Dod. Further, Dod was being accused by Adam, symbolic of the first man created in God's image. This could also suggest that he was assuming some aspect of humankind's guilt and thus serving as a metaphor for ridding humanity of the evil that we have ingested. But more than this, what made Adam unique was his Nesama conscience. After all, it is this ability to think that has caused so many to disregard the land's purpose. And by using Adam, the sacrifices of the Pesach El and the Adam HaParah are seen as similar, with actual men symbolically portrayed as sacrificial animals. Also, Am means people. A millennium before it actually occurred, the prophet revealed that his offer of redemption would be disrespected by some and rejected by others and seen as worthless by members of his own family. Yehudim. Proper consideration of these carefully chosen terms opens a revealing window into the nature, character, and intellect of the Messiah, as well as into the collective responses of humankind, doing the same for his Bashar, who is also sacrificing his body for the Bereth Am covenant family, and for Am Yisrael, the people of Israel. Even today, the vast preponderance of people show very little regard for those gifts of life. Not one person in a million acknowledges the association between his suffering and Pesach. Fewer still appreciate the sacrifice Dod's soul made on our behalf during Masa. And in this regard, as his Bashar human herald, I was the first person in 2,500 years to make and share these connections, thereby completing God's story. Without having done so, the consequence is that there would have been no one at the Shavua Ketzer, no one at the Teruah Lakat. And without the herald sacrifice during the fulfillment of Teruah, there would be no Kippurim. The earth would be destroyed. I find this to be highly satisfying as a conclusion to the final portion of my first two lives. Yahweh introduced himself to me on Teruah. It was a Wednesday afternoon, the 19th of September, 2001. 8 days after the Islamic suicide bombings on 9/11/2001. As I studied his Torah, I came to realize that between now and the fulfillment of the Teruah Lakat in September 23rd and 24th and 2033, that we honor the intent of this day by being troubadours, heralding Yahweh's message. Therefore, I have spent the past 23 years of my life as the living embodiment of Teruah's purpose. Little did I know, though, that I would die on this day to resolve the guilt of a remnant of Yisrael, that after surviving thousands of death threats, I would willingly allow Satan and Muslims to bludgeon me. Or that Yahweh's most powerful and inspiring orator, Eliyah, would be speaking at my funeral. That said, I'm glad that God waited 23 years to share this with me. Because if he had said it much earlier, I might have cowered and run away. It was a lot to process. I'm delighted with the opportunity. Now I'm honored that he would think that I was capable of doing this. And I will do. I will do as he has requested. And I will do so proudly, for my father and for his people, and on behalf of my king. Continuing on the previous theme, the reference to Tola'a, bloodied worm, is both prophetic and telling. The Romans, like the Muslims after them, were and remain sadistic in their deployment and development of the most demeaning and excruciating ways to kill. Having been under their control, the body that dosed Nephesh still occupied was so abused it no longer appeared human. The same will be true 2 millennia thereafter with the red heifer. Although this would come from the death cult that has done more to condemn than anyone, that I think I have done more to condemn than anyone in human history, with from the doom becoming God's religion.
This reminds me of Hosea 14:2. It talks about being fully restored, completely reconciled, Shalem, for the par safa anafnu, the message of the bull on our lips.
You know, the I have recently spent, I guess it was 2 weeks, maybe three, correcting all of the yada yada volumes for the most recent, torrent of new insights that Yahweh has released and revealed to us recently. And as I'm going back through prophecies that we translated 10, 12, 15 years ago, you see mentions of this day and what the bull is offering and how God's going to transform this remnant of the people and take away their guilt at this time. It's everywhere. It is sort of like having the floodgates open when you realize that Dod is the one who fulfilled Pesach, Mas, and Bechorim. And then you see it everywhere. And you wonder how it was possible to miss. And then when you first encounter the idea that Yahweh has a Choder, who serves as the secondary stem, and that there's an entire chapter of Yasayah devoted to it, then you realize most of Yasayah is a textbook on how to properly Choder, to serve as a Choder, how to even respond to a Choder. And then you realize that God has some 20 titles that are descriptive of what this man's going to do, and that his role as the Adam HaPorah was right there before. It's just having the proper perspective. I've long said that the art of translating, something I've done now for the past 23 years, was not just a skill set in systematically investigating the root meaning of every word and then being consistent in their application, but there was also the perspective from which those translations were delivered. You must know who Yahweh is, what he's offering, and you must come to understand and appreciate God's overall story. And it's only when we know that whole story that we can correctly understand what he's been saying. And this message is one that God revealed 2,500 to 3,500 years ago, knowing no one would understand it until such time as it had to be understood for this planet to survive, for his family to endure. And so while we have been at it for 25 years, much of what we've come to learn has been in the last 2 or 3 years, with only now 2 years remaining before the Shavuah harvest, and just 9 to this magnificent day on Teruah. So God is revealing the meaning of the message, the details of his plan, really at the cusp of his return. When Yisrael, we will either process them and respond to them, or there will be no more tomorrows. This is the last hope. And while I would not value myself anywhere near where Yahweh obviously has placed his acclaim, nevertheless, God is very clear in his prophecy. We succeed. Together, in spite of ourselves, with the benefit of Yahweh's seven spirits, and following the agenda that he has laid out, being willing to go where the words lead, literally doing as he asks, this all turns out. There is a Shavuah harvest. There is a Teruah gleaning. The red heifer will sacrifice his life so that Israel will live. Dod and Yahweh will come home. And it will be a marvelous homecoming and a great celebration of this family reunion. It is all going to transpire as God laid it out. He picked people that he would work through. And in spite of all of our flaws, he has managed to prevail through us. And he will continue to do so. In the case of his son, this is something that God could never forget or forgive on what Yisrael has done to disregard those sacrificial gifts on Pesach and Matzah leading to Bukkotah. So be assured, he will hold the leadership of Imperial Rome accountable for bludgeoning him, as well as the Roman Catholic Church, because they would develop and popularize a conspiracy to blame Jews for what they themselves had done, while robbing everyone of the value of Dod's sacrifice. The same would be true with Muslims and their demonic Quran. Yes, the body is a great Zeruah, and the reflective Zeruah, who would cultivate his harvest, were there to die. But there was no reason to torture either of them. All it did was reveal the contrast between God's way and man's approach. And therein is the lesson that's lost on the preponderance of people. Rome was validating Dod's prophetic assessment that it was the most vicious civilization in its dealings with Yehudim. They were brutalizing an innocent man. They saw fit to torture the king of Israel, God's son. Not only were they in opposition to Yahweh and Yehudim, their animosity towards God and his people would metastasize in the beast which evolved from them to the Roman Catholic Church and then throughout Christianity. And this is not a simple lapse in judgment, a momentary refrain from morality. The crucifixion of God's beloved Son became the central plank of the most popular religion in the history of humankind. A dead God on a stick. All the Messiah had to do to serve as the Zeruah sacrificial lamb and fulfill Pesach was to surrender his corporeal body as a ransom for his people. Degrading and humiliating, revolting and antagonizing torture was Rome's idea, not God's. The Christian logo, that of a tortured God on a stick, commemorates evil, not good. And so on Teruah, 2,000 years later, history will repeat itself in this same place for a similar purpose. As for the lessons we should have learned, Dod's testimony reveals that his body was disposable, as will be the case with his bizarre human herald. He was sacrificing it to serve as the lamb to save his people, as would the final witness as the heifer. It is in this light that we should low-ish not focus on the tortured body, but instead on the good derived from it. As we discovered, Dod's sacrifice was not only dishonored by the empire torturing him, he was also rejected by the people of Israel, his family, those whose respect he was there to earn. Resolving this is our primary mission, and we are making tremendous headway because the Messiah's lives and lyrics are being heralded again. It is amongst the most important of the 12 gifts that we are offering God's people. Therefore, in the case of the red heifer, at this late date, there will no longer be time for ignorance or rejection. And that is why the final Zeruah tried to beat some sense into the remaining olives, lecturing them on what they must now do to survive. But thankfully, with Elia following Yahweh's instructions, we can be confident that God's intent will be achieved. With all of the prophecies pointing to Dode, serving as the Passover lamb, there was and remains no excuse for Israel getting this so long. And approaching 2,000 years later, and even with Yahweh and coming home freely available, most still haven't figured it out. But this is changing. As we approach Teruah, the sacrifice of the red heifer, and Yom Kippurim, all leading to Sukkah. That said, just as I was the first to realize and share that Dode, as the Messiah, Son of God, and past and returning king, came to fulfill Pesach, Matzah, and Bikurim in year 4000 Yah, 33 CE, I'm the first to reveal the timing, identity, and purpose of the red heifer. Since Moshe scribed these words millennia ago, and that is as it should be. And if you're bothered by me taking credit for these things, there's a reason that I do so. Yahweh made these prophecies so that when these revelations were disclosed, Israel might recognize that this is the word that Yahweh spoke being materialized before their very eyes. Beginning a decade or more ago, I told everyone who would listen that we should try to emulate Dode. He is Yahweh's chosen one and his beloved. Little did I know at the time how close I would come.
Wow.
Yisro'el is the beneficiary of the Pesach and Teruah sacrifices. This will do for me actually what it did for Dode. Justified.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was confident enough. Now, since he trusts us, so shouldn't you?
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. Yes.
Well, I'll readily concede that the lessons of Yahweh 17 and the related Bamidbar 5 and 19, Barishu 15, Malachi 4, and 1 Malachim 18 are a bit obscure, requiring the proper perspective, a thorough investigation with an open mind, an amplified translation, and a keen awareness of how the pieces of the portrait God is painting fit together. I'm not surprised, therefore, that it took over 20 years of diligent investigation, or that we didn't figure this out until we were within 2 years of the time available to us. But such is not the case with recognizing that Dode is the Son of God, the returning Messiah, and that he fulfilled Pesach, Matzah, and Bikurim, or that he is returning on Yom Kippurim to be the king of Sukkah. There are affirmations everywhere, and he is the only candidate in any of them, and all of them.
Yeah.
Also, while there are many hundreds of subtle and overt pronouncements declaring that Yahweh would appoint his shoulder, Kol, Nakri, Ed, Malach, and Bashar, someone named Yada as the final Zeruah. Seeing them all in conjunction with our time, fulfilling the final Mikre and restoring Yahweh's name and Dode's acclaim isn't hidden either. But to see the pattern, one must either be looking for it or receptive to it.
Mm-hmm.
However, over the course of 3,500 years, someone among God's people should have figured some of this out long before me. For example, the realization that Dode was serving as the worm of Jacob, and thus Israel, was foretold by Yeshayah, Isaiah, 300 years after Dode wrote the 22nd Mizmor 3,000 years ago. In Yeshayah 41:14, we read, "You should never be afraid, O worm of Jacob, of Israel. People of Israel, I myself am here to help and support you," prophetically announces Yahweh. "Your kinsman redeemer, he is the set-apart one of Israel, of the individuals who engage and endure with God." Dode is the kinsman redeemer. He is the set-apart one of Israel. He is the reason that in Malachi we read that this man who will perform as the red heifer is focused not only on Yahweh, but of the set-apart one of Yisrael, God's Son, our Messiah and King, the Zeruah, sacrificial lamb, our Savior, Zod. Zod's Mizmor, and Yeshayahu's prophecies and his portrayal of our salvation are really inseparable as hand and glove, especially when identifying Zod as the sacrificial lamb. When presenting the set-apart one as Yisrael, Zod is the kinsman redeemer of his people. This realization has not been hidden, and yet no one saw it until now. To a lesser degree, the same is true with how the first meal of the covenant in Bereshit 15 leads to the problem of Yisrael breaking the Bereshit in Bamidbar 5, which is then resolved in Numbers 19 with the red heifer. And Eliyahu's magnificent work in ridding Yisrael of religious and political actors in 1 Malachim 18 puts us in position to appreciate how Yeshayahu 17 will be fulfilled. But there are so many clues, all of which we hope to uncover over time, such that Shemot 15, 17 through 27, Yeshayah 1, 1 through 11, and Malachi 4, 1 through 4, along with a reviewing of the life and calling of the chosen one, all tell us the same story. All of these pieces fit together. It's like the ultimate puzzle. When you get the pieces in the proper place, all of the prophets tell the same story.
Mm-hmm.
What we're sharing with you is the conclusion of Yahweh's story to his people. Therefore, while Yahweh has already introduced the full cadre of metaphors and depictions for everyone who is paying attention, so that we come to recognize that Father and Son are orchestrating this story of the red heifer, connection would be made between Messiah and Messenger, between branch and stem, between the King and Prince, the Sun and the Moon, the Lamb and the Bull, and how Pesach, Matzah, and Bikurim are reflected again in Teruah, Kippurim, and Sukkah. It's the ultimate story. Now, to understand it, I first came to realize that Dod would be serving in the role of the high priest to anoint the mercy seat of the Ark of the Covenant with the blood of the bull. During Kippurim, when reading the story in Zechariah of how Yosha was a disgusting and filthy mess, boy, that turned out to be true. As a result of the high priest's clothes, they would have to be cleansed and placed on our Messiah and King. But for that to be accomplished, Eliyahu would be the first to cleanse his own in the ashen waters of the red heifer. I will share this with you and we'll conclude our program. We'll pick up this place next week. It reads, okay. This is Numbers 19:7. Therefore, the one acting in the role of priest, Eliyahu, will launder and wash, cleansing his treacherous apparel, and bathe his body, removing his impurities in the water, and then in the end, he may come to the encampment, but the priest will be unclean and defiled as a witness until the evening at sunset. And we will consider the nuances of this, just as the garments of the priest that Dod would wear to fulfill Yom Kippurim, to anoint the mercy seat of the Ark of the Covenant, would be cleansed because of all the stains and religiosity of the Jewish people over time. The ultimate purpose of this event is to get this remnant of Yisrael through to the sunset. Because when the sun sets on Yom Kippurim, October 2nd, 2033, 6:22 p.m. in Jerusalem, it will be all over for those who have not also washed their clothing in the ash-laden waters emanating from the red heifer. We'll pick up the story next week. Thank you, Dee, and Kirk, for being with me for two programs this evening. We will close this one with the song of the Red Heifer, the Adama Hurrah song. I think it is yours, Dee, and y'all have a wonderful week. I hope to do shows like this more often, where we do 2 1 to 1.5 hour shows as opposed to one long show. I think it makes it easier to transfer these programs to social media, and we can share the message more effectively. Well, thank you so much. Good night.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.
Upon the mountain, reconciliation comes at the end of time.
Out of my power, the Red Heifer slaughtered like a kinsman before. The heifer is slain. Out of my power, the ox is
Shalom. comfort for you, oh Israel. Gather around, see the red heifer burn. Follow our seven remainders so they tell. In just 10 days, the King of Shalom returns. Israel, welcome your prince, remember your king.
Israel. Shalom.
I'm normally the person who starts the chat, plans the date, so it was nice to
let someone else do the work for us?
Weirdly, yeah.
I mean, the rage was the rough.
I just wasn't ready to go home, you know?
I wasn't either. By day 6, we've done every activity uptown.
So crazy. That's so fun.
Hello, you there? I caught you daydreaming, didn't I? Your dream vacation doesn't have to be a dream. It's waiting at Okana Resort. From 13 unique food and beverage outlets to fun for all like laser tag and sports simulators, Okana offers something for everyone. While they're home to one of the largest indoor water parks, the experiences go beyond the slide. Unwind in a serene spa, lounge in the cabana by the 4.5-acre adventure lagoon, or sip cocktails at the swim-up bar. Make it iconic. Make it Okana. Opening February 21st.